Welcome to the Ember Wing Collective podcast. I'm Kimberly Beer.
And I'm Vicky Jerica.
Hi, Vicky. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, totally unprepared to record a podcast, I guess. I have had nothing but crazy little things going on in my world this morning. So, but since this is our very first episode of the Ember Wing Collective podcast, I'm not going to dive any deeper into that. You showed up like completely prepared, which I do think reflects our individual personality types, where I am more of the free flow. I don't care what's going on in the world. I'll just kind of show up and hope shit happens right. And you, who like to prepare and have all of the T's crossed and the I's dotted. So
I think
that is a very much, and thankfully we've known each other a few years. So thank you for being patient with me this morning and my craziness.
No worries.
Yeah, always a crazy day at the Beer Ranch, as I say.
Yeah.
So our topic for today is super fun for our very first episode. And in some ways, I feel a little bit like I need to make a confession. So first of all, let me say the topic of the show is masks. And I do want to say that I think I do put on a mask. Oh, it's a good one, but I put on a mask for showing up to be a podcaster. As a matter of fact, I did the things that make the mask real for me in order to show up here. And that is, I curled my hair, I put on a little bit of makeup. And although it still looks like me, I definitely have a little bit of a mask on when I show up to a podcast episode. What do you think about that?
I think that that is probably my number one mask that I wear. I mean, I woke up an hour early so that I could make sure that my mask was nice and solid, and with the hair and the makeup. And I don't know. I think that's a typical mask. I've been wearing that particular mask for a while. I used to kid my friends that knew me really well back in the day and say, you can tell how bad I'm feeling inside by how good I look outside.
Wow.
And that was a mask that I was telling them I was wearing, you know, so that it was a hint for them to say, hey, how are you doing? You look really put together today. Is that true? And I'd be like, oh, thank you for asking. No, I'm a mess.
Well, and that's true of a lot of us, right? I think of myself when I was working in corporate America, and I had to show up in a very certain way. Like, I had to show up with the makeup on. I had to show up with nice clothes that were clean and ironed and pressed, and it definitely was not me. And it's one of those things that I laugh. Here's my feet can even wear a mask, right? So after I left corporate America, I tossed all my heels. I mean, I didn't have a bonfire because I wasn't that cognizant of what was happening, but I did never put them back on. And slowly over the decades that I've been gone from having a quote unquote real job, they have disappeared. And what's interesting is my feet have spread out and taken up full residence of boots and tennis shoes. Like, they're like, no, we're not going back in a pair of heels. But I would put on that outfit. And my mother even taught me really, really well, which is another interesting point, right? Our mothers sometimes teach us what's masks that we need to put on. She taught me early on how to wear my secretary voice. That was exactly what she called it. You need to show up with your secretary voice on. And when you answer the phone, that's your voice. And what's interesting to me is I still do that today. I will pick up my secretary voice, which is this one that you're listening to right now, pretty much. I pick up my secretary voice in order to interact with people. And that's kind of a mask too. It's really interesting how we keep putting those things on and where we perceive they benefit us.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too that, you know, when you think of mask, you think of just the face, right?
Yeah.
But you're really talking about whole body. like the outfit, the shoes, everything, that it really is a costume almost, not just a mask.
Exactly. A good Halloween costume is head to toe.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And that's what we're here. I mean, that's what kind of inspired this episode is Halloween or Samhain, for those of you who pronounce it differently. Yes. But yeah, it's all about showing up as somebody you're not. And it's interesting, I think, in our culture, when you look at little kids, when they show up at your doorstep, you see both the shining example side, the Supermans, the heroes, the Wonder Womans, the Justice League, you know, right. All of those costumes. And right alongside of them are the shadows, the Freddy Kruegers, the I guess, do kids dress up as Freddy Krueger anymore? Is that long gone?
I don't know. I don't know. I did see a Chucky costume. So it's the same thing, yeah. Right? Yeah. And how they stand right next to each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how some kids choose which one they want to impersonate or embody, like right. Whether they want to choose a positive one or a negative one. So an interesting little fact about me is I never went trick-or-treating. The first time I went trick-or-treating, I was a teenager. I was well wow. past the age when you should be trick-or-treating. And one of my friends actually found out I had never been trick-or-treating. And so he took me trick-or-treating. And we just did last-minute costumes. He draped a sheet over me. We cut out eye holes. And I went as some weird-ass ghost. And what was funny is that we went trick-or-treating. This was after I'd moved down here to the country. And for those of you who don't know, I live in a very rural area, and the town that we went to trick-or-treat has a population of 800. Oh. So you don't exactly get to hide behind your masks as well as you would think you could. And what was right. funny is one of the houses that we went to was actually the bank that my mother used. And the lady who answered the door happens to be one of the tellers at the bank and immediately recognized me, even with my ghost costume on, my very poorly done ghost costume. And she's like, "Kim?" And like, I was horrified. But it was the only time in my life I ever got to go trick-or-treating. My parents didn't, we lived in the country, and it's very painful to trick-or-treat when you live in rural America because houses are miles and miles apart.
Sure.
And not to mention the fact that you never knew whose house you're driving up to around here. Right. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of, what is the song? A country boy can survive kind of an attitude around here. So people don't tend to go trick-or-treating. And so I never did as a kid. Did you get to go trick-or-treating?
Absolutely. Every Halloween. And, when you were talking, I was thinking about the first time I really remember going. My mom has pictures. You know, every year me and my younger brother would dress up and she'd take photos and all that. And when I was three, I went as this is going to be an inappropriate word, but hobo. Okay. Yeah. And so they had put, makeup of some kind to make me look like I had a mustache and a beard, you know, just the shadow. And I wore clothes, like a flannel shirt and jeans and stuff. But I was carrying my dad's cigar in the photo. I have it, and I have it up to my mouth, and it is lit. Like, he popped it out of his mouth, put it into mine, took the picture, and said, "This is what we're going to record," as you as a three-year-old.
That was the 1970s for you, though. Nobody cared about smoking.
Absolutely, yeah. So, but yeah, I do remember pictures. And for my kids, when my kids came along, Halloween was big. It was a special, special holiday for us. And all my husband, my three boys, all of us, we got dressed up. We decorated the house. everything. We went all out in celebration, I guess. So it's fun. Of the holidays, that's the one that I prefer, I guess.
Yeah, Halloween has been an interesting, it was such a non-holiday in my house as a child, which is weird, right? Because that's like a very kid holiday. Yeah. And then as I grew up, my mother's this interesting blend of witchy and non-witchy, right? So probably my most vivid Halloween memory comes from the day she passed away. She actually passed on Halloween. So it was interesting to me because she had this sort of, I don't know, witchy attitude about things, and being able to choose to leave the planet on that particular day and cross over right around the Day of the Dead was very interesting to me. And it felt very mindful on her behalf as to why she chose to leave on that particular day. And I do say chose to leave because she honestly did choose to leave. I mean, I left her hospital bed. She told me she loved me bunches and bunches, which she rarely ever did. And then said, you will be better off in living your life without me here. And then mindfully chose within 2 hours of me leaving that hospital to exit the planet. Wow. So, and to do it on that specific day. So I've always, now when I think about Halloween, I have this other interesting thing for the last 20 years where I look at this holiday very differently as also the day my mother crossed over. So it has a different resonation with me than it did before. So interestingly, since our topic today is masks and how you wear them, I think it's the day she pulled off her mask completely and stood in her own truth. So it's an interesting holiday around that as well. An interesting concept around that wearing of masks and removing of masks.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you and I talked about before we started this episode was, when was the first time you realized you were putting a mask on intentionally? Like, what was that first moment?
For me, my mom enrolled me in charm school. So it was a beauty and etiquette school. And I was 13. And up to that point, I was... I have a potty mouth. Did back then too. Yeah. Smart aleck, little sassy kid that ran the ridges. And she wanted me to know how to wear a dress and pantyhose and dress and put makeup on and do my hair and everything. And there were tests that you had to take in this school where you had to show that you knew what you were learning. And I wasn't really paying attention. And I, you know, one of the first masks that I put on was confidence, that I could put on an outfit and wear it with authority. And even though it felt uncomfortable and kind of constricting in a way, like pantyhose, you know, around the waist is constricting. Yeah. But that was probably the first time, part of the schooling was to actually model. So I went out into the greater Kansas City and did modeling gigs, and to feel confident that I could pull that off, was a mask that I had to put on and wear, cause I sure wasn't feeling it internally, but yeah, so that was the very first mask. Not a bad mask to put on, by the way, but it was a mask. I identify it as a mask.
Absolutely. And you know what's interesting about that is that you're an introvert, like a self-professed, pretty high introvert. You don't subscribe to that. And I was sitting here thinking, because I hadn't really thought too much about, like, when did I start putting on masks, or when did I really become intentionally aware that I was doing something that was masking my true self. And what's interesting is I'm this outgoing person. I am an extrovert. Part of that, I think, has to do with the fact that that was a survival skill I had to have in my family. But what's interesting about that is that survival skill did not translate to school. And in school, I was a quiet kid. I was very introverted. I didn't talk a lot. I sat in the back of the room a lot. I still exuded some type of confidence because people remember me as confident, which I'm like, oh my God, I was anything but. But it still was, it was never me at 100%, mostly because whenever I showed up at 100% of who I was, I got bad reviews. Like, it just didn't work. Like that showing up as me. And what the takeaway for me, even as a kid going to like elementary school, was that I could not show up as who I am. I had to show up as somebody else to be palatable by the people that were around me. And it was weird. Like I can remember intentionally sitting in the back of the room when I really wanted to sit in the front of the room, not putting myself out there when I really, really wanted to. Like in speech class, I can remember in junior high speech class, I wanted to be up there making the speeches, but I felt that I couldn't. And so I put this mask on that I hid over in the corner. And even when that same class, which turned into drama in another semester, I wouldn't try out to be one of the actors in the play. I ended up wearing the mask of who was behind the lights. And it, and as you know me, you probably would have gone, I would have seen you going out for the lead role. I volunteered to run the lighting behind the scenes because I did not think who I was really who I really wanted to show up as, who I really am, was acceptable for that particular audience. And so I purposely hid myself and put on a mask that made me as invisible as I possibly could be. And that's my memory of it. What's interesting is when I go back and I talk to friends from high school, they're like, I don't remember you in that capacity at all. I remember you as a confident person. I remember you as a leader. And I always laugh because I always figure I'm a reluctant leader most of the time. I take over the leading role because nobody else is stepping up to do it. And my ADD won't let me not let the situation move forward. Like I've got to make it go to the next step. And so if nobody steps up there and does it, I'm going to step up there and do it. So yeah, that's how I ended up being the model hollerer at a bunch of photo shoots for cowgirls with cameras. Is like, nobody makes a decision and tells the model what to do. I'm going to say it. And now I have that, and I'm not going to call it a mask. I'm going to call it a crown. Because I have been ordained as the person who yells at the models. So yeah, it's an interesting concept of... And when you become aware that you are intentionally putting on a mask. I think the second time when I became really aware of all of the things that I intentionally was putting forward into the world was when I sat down with our mutual friend who is no longer with us, Martha Coyle, and did my mandala. I'd done that as part of Touched by a Horse and my training with Melissa Pierce, but Martha took it to a whole nother level for me. And what was interesting in that moment is she sat me down, and it wasn't just about roles or parts of self, which I hadn't really studied as much as I have. By this point now, I feel very confident in my own parts of self and helping others find their parts of self through hypnosis and gestalt and a bunch of other things that I do. But back then I didn't. And I remember the first thing we did is we listed out a bunch of things and we put all of these sticky notes up on it. In my mind, I'm remembering it as a window, but it could have been something else in one of their rooms in a house they have in Wickenburg, Arizona. And she put them all up there. And then she did this really interesting process where she was able to ask me questions and determine which ones that I had, like which costumes, which masks that I had intentionally picked up and put on that really weren't mine, that I did not belong wearing. Like those were things like pieces of clothes in my closet that were transient. I bought that to fit me in that particular size and situation and moment. And then there's these ones that I was born with that I, that are really me and who I am and at the center of who I am. And it was interesting to me, especially the one about being a wife. I've always, culturally, women are asked to be wives in our culture. That is, and I don't care how feminist you are, there is still a cultural implication to become someone's wife. And I was never able to make that. I always felt super defective because I tried. I played house with some guys. I really did put an effort forward to put on the mask, the costume, the entire role of being someone's wife. But when we sat down and we looked at it, that was a costume that was hanging in my closet that I was trying to put on, but it never fit. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, it wasn't something that I came here with. I didn't come here to be in that particular, I didn't come equipped with that mask on my arrival. And trying to fit myself into that box was heartbreaking. And I will tell you, in that moment, she helped me release something that I'd probably held on to for 40 years, 30 years at the time, because this has been a while ago, 30 years, and just said, I'm okay with leaving that here. I don't need that. I can take that costume out of my closet and I can burn it because it's not necessary for me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's one of the gifts of doing some self-work and seeing which masks, you know, or costumes that you're trying to fit into that aren't yours to wear. For sure. I think that I probably still, even with all the personal work that I do, there's probably way back in the closet, in my closet, you know, costumes that I'm still kind of trying to get into that aren't mine. But for the most part, I've given all those up, but I know of like one or two that's still stuck in the closet that I'm like, yeah, I can fit into that. I'm sure I can.
I can lose some weight or change my hair or gain some weight, and that costume will look good on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's really fun. That metaphor of that being the closet, it's interesting who hung those costumes in there. Who went in and hung that costume? And interestingly enough, for me, the wife costume got hung in there by just the place I live and the culture that I'm around. The women in my family were not, you've got to get married and have kids kind of women. They were, and neither was my father. They were very much go do whatever the hell it is you want to do. So that costume got put in my closet by the culture and the people around me, the society that I grew up in, which was this rural Missouri, very evangelical, Baptist, biblical kind of community where that particular mask and costume, a lot of women feel comfortable in it, or at least they look like they feel comfortable in it, which is the thing that I found out in working with Gestalt and seeing people here on the ranch as they work through understanding who they really are and pulling off those masks and sitting across from them and examining if that mask really is something that came in their original design, or whether it was something that was put there by someone else in their world, is that there's a lot of women who, like me, there are roles that they don't fit into. There are masks and costumes and outfits that they try to wear, and it doesn't fit as well as it should. Mother is another one that comes to mind. You know, I mean, and then there's the flip side of that. There's women who feel like they get pushed out of those roles and out of those costumes when it's really what they want to wear. So
right.
I think we're in a very interesting time in our culture and society where we feel like we have the opportunity to choose, but then we also don't really have the opportunity to choose. Not as much as we would like. It's like there's an illusion that you have the freedom to choose your mask and your costume. But sure. Yeah, maybe not so much.
Maybe not so much. That's right. Yeah. So I've got a question for you. When you realize that you're wearing a mask and you go to take it off, what's that like? How do you go through that process?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, because we were talking earlier about that sticky residue that can get stuck all over you. And I had this immediate feeling of, you know, those really stinky plastic masks we used to get in school when we were kids.
Yeah.
That younger people, I don't know, have ever had the opportunity to smell the inside of one of those masks, but it could immediately, I don't know, it immediately sucked a certain number of brain cells out of your head just from the toxic fumes of the plastic.
Right. Right.
But, you know, it did have a residue that sometimes would stick to you long afterwards. And I don't know. I think I cleaned the wife one off, but I have moments where I'll still find a piece that's stuck to me, and I'll be like, oh, you know, I'll meet an interesting man and I'll sit across from him. And if he's kind of interested in me, I'll want to go down that path again. And I have to remember and think to myself, why are you doing this? Is it because you're feeling the need for that mass to be magnetically sucked back onto you? Or are you really coming at this from a true, whole, open-hearted space? Right. And I think that, I guess my answer to that is that I think once you recognize that you have masks that you put on and take off, that you become more aware of when they naturally slide back into place because they do come up. I don't know. What about you? Do you still have some that get in your way for getting them off?
Yes. And I think for me, the really learning that I was wearing them was from like all my mindfulness training and all the work that I did, right? Because being congruent, my thoughts, my body sensations, the feelings, everything was in alignment. And when I'm wearing a mask, I'm not congruent, right? I am uncomfortable in some form. Either the thoughts that I'm having don't align with my values, or, you know, I'll feel pinched, if you will, like that costume that's too tight, right? So my body shifts. And that's when, like, if I'm really paying attention, being mindful, that's when I know, oh, wait, I've got something on my face. You know, I'm projecting something that I'm not. And when I do that, when I realize that, that's the opportunity that I can go, okay, is this something that I really need to be wearing at this time? Because there are times that you need to have a mask on, for whether it's for safety or just meeting expectations sometimes, you know, like a job to pay the bills, you're going to put a mask on, perhaps, right? And I understand that's okay. That's important. But then knowing when you're taking it off and knowing that you got all the residue off is when you're like, oh, I can breathe, and your body feels more comfortable and your thoughts settle down and come back into with, you know, you start living within your values again. That's when I know that I've done take that must off. But yeah, there's times. I don't think like the confidence mask that I put on as a kid. I think having some of that stick to me, it's kind of like, what is that old adage? Fake it until you make it, right?
Fake it until you make it, yeah.
Yeah. So having that confidence and wearing that mask long enough with practice, it becomes, right? Like that neural pathway, I'm just building it over and over and over again. And then I could take a mask off and actually stand in my own confidence, but I've done the work that actually supports that vision going forward, or that me that's showing up authentically in confidence. So I don't know. To go back to your question, you know, the only way that I know that to take it off is to find myself a space where I feel safe enough or, you know, supported enough to sit in my own authenticity and to really just hold it and say, is this mine? You know, do the parts work so that I know whether or not it is a part that I'm playing in the costume that I'm wearing for that part, or if it is authentically me.
And I think it's an interesting exploration that people undertake in understanding that. And you said something interesting with the fake it till you make it part. I teach a lot of classes around branding to entrepreneurs, and especially to authors and artists. And authors and artists tend to be typically introverted humans. There's there is a mass majority of introverts in that group, that not all of them, but a lot of them. And I always tell them to brand themselves for who they want to be, not who they are. Like, mm-hmm. to look down the road and see who they want to be and not necessarily as they are right in this moment. And that requires them to manufacture their own mask, to create mindfully who they want to become. And then it's from the point of just like going to the shoe store and picking out the right slippers, the right glass slipper to fit on your foot. You know what? We all maybe wanted to be Cinderella, but glass slippers sound incredibly uncomfortable to me. So maybe you don't want the glass slipper. Maybe it's a little bit more comfortable persona. That's part of finding your own personal brand is learning that and kind of figuring out what fits for you and what doesn't fit for you. And it's an interesting experiment to brand yourself for the person that you want to be, not the person that you are in this particular moment in context to business. Sure. And
is it a context to just business though?
I don't know. I think in my teachings, I teach them in context to business because again, it's the secretary voice, right?
Right.
It's how you show up in that particular situation. And I think the costume gives you power. It's like Wonder Woman's cape, right? Mm-hmm. Even though you may not feel like you own it yet, if you put it on, you can feel powerful enough to show up in that situation as Wonder Woman, not as Jane Doe, who right. none of these people know, right? And right. I do leave room open to say, what if you find the perfect you in that? What if you find that, oh, you know what? The cape really does belong on me, you know? And guess what? I looked a little deeper and I found the magic lasso.
Right.
You know, what if you do look and you find those things that are a little bit deeper and you find them in yourself? I think it starts to peel back those layers so that you can find more of your authenticity in that moment and stand in your own truth. And then if it doesn't feel right, to back up and adjust and find a different pair of shoes or a different cape. Maybe you have a different persona that you want to bring on to try on to see if you can borrow part of that. So I think that's the fun of this of how we have translated, let me make that clear, how we have translated what Halloween should be. underneath it all, it's a whole different thing in the world. But how our culture has translated what this holiday means is adopting, you know, different personas, different shadow selves, different confident selves, not always just the shadows, but sometimes the who we would want to be, and to try it on and see what aspects of that really do fit for us and what ones do not.
Right.
Yeah. And for those of you who are listening that are going, well, how do I find some of these things out for myself? You know, I started to kind of treat people, because I sort of live in this world where a lot of the people I hang out with have done parts work. Like, they used to say parts of self and they 100% know. And then like Vicky and I, when we were preparing for this, Vicky whipped out her little parts of self chart, and I pulled up my entire parts of self chart from the cloud. Like, it's recorded somewhere, but not everybody has done that. And if you're wondering what in the heck is a part of self, that is who's driving the bus. I've heard that is an interesting way to explain it. I did attend something the other day that was done by another hypnotherapist, and I'm going to give you her name. Her name is Lori Hammond. And I thought she had a really interesting explanation for this. So I'm going to share and hopefully encourage you to look her up as well as Vicky and I. But she said, "Is who's the head of who's, you know, your parts of self are all these kids in a classroom. And the part of self that you are putting forward is the kid that's at the front of the class, who's telling everybody what to do or showing everybody what to do. And some of your parts never get to come up to the head of the class, and other parts do. And depending on the situation, what kid you invite up to be in the front of the classroom makes a huge difference in the outcome of that." Mm-hmm. And I think for some of us, at least in the beginning, when we start to look at who's in our classroom, or if you want to use the who's driving the bus analogy metaphor, you know, who all is on the bus, there are some imposters on there. There are some people wearing masks. There are some people in costume. There are some parts of self that really don't belong there, that have somehow managed to get in the wrong classroom or on the wrong bus. And it's sorting out those from the true and authentic parts of who you are. I don't know. Did that make any kind of sense?
Yeah. Well, it did to me, but
again, preaching to the choir, right?
Right. I
mean, yeah. Yeah. So get to hang out with people. But it's fun if this is something that interests you and you don't know your parts of self or want to learn about it.
Right.
Hypnotherapy is a great way to do it. Gestalt is a great way to do it. There's lots of avenues in order to explore that for yourself, so that you can start to understand more of these aspects around you and which ones you arrived here with, which ones are original design, which ones somebody handed to you, and which ones you've created on your own in order to handle any given situation. So, right. Yeah, you're not crazy if you feel you have different parts of yourself. Let's put it that way. Right. It's all a natural part of how you make yourself up to be.
Yeah. And they all look like a mask or a costume.
They all can look like a mask or a costume. Some of them good, some of them not so good.
Right.
Do you have any closing thoughts, Vicky, before we wrap this episode up?
I don't. This was fun.
It was very fun. It was fun. So if you would like to find more information about us, check us out at theemberwingcollective.com. We have a community where we have discussions like this on a regular basis. It's brand new for us and the world out there. So join us if you are called to do so, to explore more around your own parts of self, your own masks that you put on, as well as a whole host of other things with mindfulness and with spirituality and with Gestalt and all kinds of self-discovery journey. So I hope to see you in the community. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye.